You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Novi Ligure.
Cozze ci tene cozze, cozze piscine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora. Cozze ci tene cozze, cozze piscine, non spigudeci cora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Lionel? We're outside the Villa Coppi in Novi Ligure.
We are outside the Villa Coppi, the former residence of one of the greats of Italian cycling. We're joined by another great of Italian cycling. Cue the national anthem, Lino di Mamelli.
Ciao dear listeners, I'm here and just immediately a quick thought about this stage. Don't you think that in cycling, I mean, Coppi has been a real myth for Italian cycling and for all the history of cycling, but don't you think that in cycling we speak too much about the past and not a lot about the present and future? This is a question.
Well, Ciro, tell us about the present, at least the present. Who won the stage?
Caleb Ewan. I'm well prepared, and mostly for me and for all the Italians, Elia Viviani didn't win today, so there is really a big difference between the last Giro d'Italia and this one for Elia. Last year, four stages and the point jersey, and this year, nothing.
And an argument with you last year, of course, don't forget that. That was also part of his Giro last year. What did you hear? I spoke to a couple of people. I spoke to Fabio Sabatini. I spoke to Rick Van Sliggle. They're not sure whether it's legs or confidence, what the problem has been. What do you think?
A little bit of everything, in my opinion. Certainly, he hasn't a big confidence on him, and we are seeing also the great Gilberto Simoni here. It's really a great moment, dear listeners. So Viviani, he has not a big confidence in himself, maybe doesn't trust as in the past of his teammates, and maybe also a problem of physical condition. In my opinion, in this first part of the season, the Sanremo has been a big blow. I mean, he was not able to compete for the victory, and maybe this affected a little bit.
Wow, Lionel, do you feel very out of place here? We've got Ciro, we've got Gilberto Simoni just over there, and we've got, you know, Fausto Coppi's former gaff.
Well, the finish line was about a kilometre down there, actually, wasn't it? And the team buses have all parked in this long straight road, and it feels like there's a lot of history surrounding this house. Is it lived in now? I assume it is. It must be. It's still lived in?
His son lives there. Faustino still lives there. This is really where Fausto spent his dying days with the white lady, Giulia Occhini. And we're going to find out a bit more about her in the episode, aren't we?
We are, but let's just try and describe the house. I mean, it's... it's rendered a sort of dusky salmon pink almost, isn't it? And it doesn't look like the most friendly of houses. I always think of houses as either being friendly or foreboding. This, I don't know, the gates aren't exactly welcoming, are they? It looks like they don't want people to be sort of turning up and saying hello.
It's not exactly an immaculately mowed lawn, is it? Faustino could do with investing in a fly-mo.
He could, or maybe, yeah, hiring a landscape gardener. It does look like it's seen slightly better days, but the fact that Fausto Coppi lived there, and the quite ornate, what would that... That's kind of almost bronze lettering on there, saying Villa on one side and Coppi on the other. And lots of people have come to have their picture taken outside the Villa Coppi today, so it feels like it's quite a significant place for the Giro to almost finished stage outside.
Well, Lionel, the teams are leaving. We just see the De Koninck bus is just heading out.
They're leaving very much empty-handed at the moment, aren't they, De Koninck?
Our friend Renato, Elia Viviani's dad, in his camping car following close behind. He's not looking too happy either.
Well, he's driven 12 days around Italy and hasn't seen his son win a stage yet. And I suppose that's the biggest story of this first phase of the race, isn't it? The sprint stakes are pretty much done now. It's not that there won't be further sprints in this race, maybe be one more. But the big sprinters are all going home tonight, we think. Certainly Caleb Ewan, the stage winner, is.
Time for the Tel El Tapa. Then we will be coming from another important location related to Fausto Coppi.
We need some of that kind of cartoon character speedy running noise in here.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Lots to update you on about Rafa today. First of all, check out their aero range, which is being worn by the EF Education First team in this Giro, developed for years to save you seconds. But also check out the EF Gone Racing series of films. We've not been covering the Tour of California that finished at the weekend because we've been here at the Giro, but there's an EF Gone Racing film from the Tour of California, and you can see those on rafa.cc or YouTube. Also, Rafa have launched their commuter range, which features an all-new bag designed for the rigors of the commute. There's also a waterproof commuter jacket and new shorts. So rafa.cc is the place to go for all of Rafa's range of clothing, including the Pedaleur de Charme and Pedaleurs de Charme range, of course. Now, Daniel, the tale of the Tapa. Well, we could sum it up in a few lines, really. Three Italians went on the attack. It was stage 11, 221 kilometres from Carpi to Novi Ligure. And the three riders are becoming familiar faces because it was Marco Frapporti, Androni's, what did Gianni Savio call him? The freelancer. The freelancer. He was up the road, as was Mirko Maestri and Damiano Cima.
Correct. Cima, ironically enough, Cima means summit or kind of mountaintop in Italian, and we haven't seen anything resembling a mountain for a while. Although there are some appearing on the horizon, aren't there, Napalm? We can see the Piedmontese Alps looming tantalizingly.
Oh, come on. There were two speed humps today, which the peloton had to go over.
I haven't found out, this was my job, to find out whether the race actually went past Evgeny Berzin's Opel dealership today. Of course, we spoke to Berzin in the 1994 Giro winner 25 years ago, and he does have an Opel dealership somewhere very close to the route today, south of Pavia.
He should have done an unofficial sprint, intermediate sprint, win an Opel car if for first rider across the line. That sort of thing used to happen, didn't it, back in the day in the Tour de France and probably in the Giro as well. Local businesses would do a sort of unofficial intermediate sprint. Doesn't happen anymore, of course. Well, the stage was won by Caleb Ewan, his second of the race, and he was ahead of yesterday's winner Arnaud Démare, Pascal Ackermann in third place. So Ewan and Ackermann level on two stage wins apiece from the flat stages that we've seen so far. Elia Viviani of De Koenig Quickstep empty-handed, as we said, and well, we know now that Ewan and Viviani certainly are going home. Démare probably won't be able to just yet because he's now in the Ciclamino jersey. So one jersey has changed hands, but the pink jersey still on the shoulders of Valerio Conti of UAE Team Emirates. Daniel, tomorrow, is it fair to say the Giro proper starts? Very quick question. In a word, will Conti be in the pink jersey tomorrow night?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, a lead out works well when it's timed to perfection. But if it's like 20 metres or 30 metres too short, then, you know, it's really, I guess it stuffs up and then you have to find another sprint to sit on. And that's when it gets hard because there's lots of good sprinters to choose from here. But yeah, I mean, today I'm going to try to stick to my lead out and see what happens. Yesterday I just didn't really have the legs. They did a really good job, but in the end I didn't have the legs.
Well, that was the stage winner Caleb Ewan talking to you this morning, Daniel. And what he said was quite interesting about, you know, swinging almost Tarzan-like from lead out man to lead out man. And we saw Viviani possibly make a mistake by letting go of Fabio Sabatini, but maybe Sabatini was just trying to get him into the position where he could latch onto some other wheels, although Sabatini himself looked like he was going pretty rapidly. Maybe the better bet would have been for Viviani to stay on his wheel.
Well, it's all about trust, isn't it, Lionel? Confidence in your lead out man. We're going to hear from Sabatini later. Of course, there was a headwind on the finishing straight as well, quite a stiff breeze, and that probably played its part as well. You mentioned me speaking to you in this morning, Carpi, what a gorgeous place Carpi was, wasn't it?
It was lovely, yeah. We went to a Cafe Nero. Yesterday, you took me to a Costa Coffee.
Don't mislead the listeners.
Yesterday was called Costa Cafe, and this morning was called Nero Cafe. I mean, tomorrow, what, Starbucks?
Anyway, where are we now, Lionel?
Well, we are in the Museo di Campionissimo, the Museum of Champions. I have to say, I feel very at home in here.
Am I allowed to correct you? We're almost 2 weeks in. Sorry, Lionel, but I have to correct you on that, because there's not just one Campionissimo, there's two Campionissimi. And it's the museum dedicated to both of them. And both of them have strong links to Novi Ligure, where we are now. It's called Novi Ligure. It's not in Liguria, it's in Piemonte. One of them, Costante Girardengo, winner of Napalm, two Giri d'Italia, six Milan San Remo, three Lombardies, three Giri del Piemonte, so you know, not as prestigious as it used to be. But yeah, he was the first Italian campionissimo, the first sort of real great of Italian cycling. So his Milan San Remo came between 1918 and 1928, so that was when he was in his pomp. And then, of course, Fausto Coppi.
I'm glad, yeah, I'm quite happy you correct me on that, Daniel, and not correct me on me saying how at home I feel in the Museum of Champions. It feels like my spiritual home in here.
But it's quite a museum, isn't it? This is second. We feel very lucky, actually, to have visited these two museums. Sometimes kind of sports museums can be a bit naff and unimpressive. But this museum, it's not only a real sort of shrine to Girardengo and Coppi, it's also, well, cycling in general, isn't it? Some fantastic artifacts here that have nothing to do with those two riders. Francesco Moser's extraordinary Hour Record bike is just a few metres away from us, where we're standing now, and a few metres beyond that is Francesco Moser himself. He's not a permanent exhibit, he's here for a book launch, which is taking place just over our shoulder, and it's a book about Fausto Coppi.
I'm disappointed to hear that Francesco Moser doesn't live in the broom cupboard in here, but his bike is absolutely amazing. The back wheel is huge and the front wheel is tiny. I'll post a picture of it on Twitter or Instagram by the time this episode is out, because it has to be seen to be believed. And when you tap the tubes, you know, it feels very much of its time, the mid-80s, and the wheels are almost, they feel almost like they're, you know, almost solid wood, but they're kind of an early carbon fibre, I think. I may have to check that. There may be a live corrections corner, but we've got one of those coming up as well, I think.
You were very excited about that. I was very excited about the White Lady's handbag. Giulio Occhini, who we've referred to earlier on, so Fausto Coppi became a very controversial figure because he started a kind of illicit affair with Napalm.
Well, how did that affair start? Because it's quite a story, isn't it?
Well, the affair started because Occhini's husband at the time was a doctor and a huge fan of Coppi's, and he tried to somehow obtain an autograph from Fausto Coppi, and he sent his wife to get the autograph, and she got a bit more than an autograph by all accounts, but yeah, the in this museum they've got various things that belong to her, handbag, sort of Jackie Onassis type sunglasses, and then we found out a bit more about her today, didn't we, Lionel? Because where we were earlier, the Villa Coppi, where Faustino, Fausto's son, still lives, she lived there until 1993, Giulia Occhini, but died right in front of the villa in a car accident in 1993, and I erroneously stated earlier that Fausto actually died in the villa as well, and died in Novi as well. He was living there at the just before his death, but he was actually taken to hospital in Tortona, which is where he died.
Which is where we were a couple of years ago, of course. And I think we talked a little bit about Fausto Coppi's death, and he'd been racing in Africa, hadn't he? And basically had malaria and died. And there was some kind of doubt amongst the medics that, you know, this couldn't possibly be malaria, and it was Raphael Geminiani, wasn't it, a French rider who also had malaria, and he recovered, and he was trying to basically get word to Coppi's medics to say this is what it was, but the doctors treating Coppi either didn't believe,
they used a different treatment, and yeah, it was the wrong treatment ultimately,
and Coppi died age 40 in 1960, wasn't it? And his son is over there, just over our shoulder there. Quite a big crowd in listening to Faustino, which means Little Fausto.
Yes, and he's a dead ringer for cycling's Dan Lloyd.
Is he really?
Absolute dead ringer.
Well, we're going to go over and just interrupt this event here and recommend he gets a landscape gardener for the front of his house, Daniel.
Final thing on Coppi and Novi Ligure. We shouldn't forget also that he used to work in Novi Ligure. He worked in a salumeria. What do you call a salumeria in English?
Well, it would be a salami shop, but I mean, not terribly many salami shops in the UK, are there?
No. So he started his life as a cyclist by commuting to Salumeria, where he was working as a boy, and that sort of ignited his passion.
The cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. You can win a bundle of nutrition products from Science in Sport and some Rafa kit by sharing the Cycling Podcast posts on Instagram. So just share any of the latest episode posts on Instagram in your Instagram story, and you will be in with a chance of winning a nutrition bundle and some Rafa kit. And of course, you can get 25% off all the Science in Sport range by going to scienceinsport.com and putting in the code SISCP25. We've got a sort of nutrition flavoured episode of Kilometre Zero coming up on Friday. Stand by for that. Should have mentioned yesterday's Kilometre Zero, which was with Cesare Benedetti, the road captain, lead out man, and general all-round hard worker with the Bora Hansgrohe team. We got a real insight into the kind of work that the most respected members of the peloton have to get through. And in Benedetti's case, he's working on two fronts. He's got two climbers, Rafał Majka and Davide Formolo, who are going for overall classification, and of course the sprinter Pascal Ackermann, who's won a couple of stages. So check that out. It's in all the usual places, Kilometre Zero, supported by Hansgrohe. Daniel, is it unseemly of me to have noticed that there is a table of wine over there?
No, Napalm. Wine, also, there's also a Coppi link with wine, because his daughter now owns a winery just outside Novi Ligure, makes a very good Barbera, a Timorasso, which is a very rare white grape that's grown locally. So and we're going to Barbaresco tonight, but we've really got to talk about some cycling.
We have indeed. Well, yeah, we'll talk about the Giro so far in the next part, but we'll focus on the stage winner today and losers, I guess. But the winner, Caleb Ewan, he's proving himself to be a pretty versatile sprinter, isn't he won in a variety of different circumstances this year, and today you wouldn't necessarily have thought kind of a real drag strip straight line finish into a headwind would really suit him.
No, I think he did a pretty good job of leaving it quite late. I think all of the sprinters knew they had to leave it late today, and I suppose the lead out train becomes even more important into a headwind, or making the right decision in the final 500 metres. You know, you saw Viviani, there was the moment hesitation or indecision where he didn't know whether to go to Sabatini or not, and that put him in the wind for 3 or 4 seconds. And I think Viviani, it's no secret now that he's not going quite as well as he was last year, and he really needs everything to go right for him at the moment in order to win. And you know, Ewan's problem yesterday, he said, was his legs ultimately, but I think that reflects the fact that when you've got brilliant legs, you can correct mistakes. But if you're just about on the limit of being able to win anyway, and you have to make an unnecessary effort, even if it's only a split second, that will ultimately compromise your chances, especially when, you know, I think the sprinting field at this Giro is very, very closely matched.
Well, I spoke to a couple of people outside the Lotto Soudal bus after the stage, the first of whom was Roger Kluger, part of the lead-out train, kind of one of the interchangeable pieces, it turns out, in that lead-out train. Former Giro stage winner, of course, Kluger. And then to the sports director, Bart Leysen, who runs their operation here at the Giro every year. I started off by asking Kluger whether he would have taken two stage wins for Ewan had he been offered that before the race.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're here to win stages. The goal was one, but the second one is always better. But yeah, on the flat stage is the other question. So far, he just won on hard finishes, most of the time uphill. But we still believed in him. And if it's somehow hard, not super fast like today with that headwind, he still can do it. Because he has died for the doing the right things normally in the final. Yesterday maybe he went wrong side, but Demar was just too strong probably yesterday, but today in that headwind spin he done obviously everything right.
So what else went right today? Obviously there wasn't a big crash, that makes things a lot simpler, doesn't it?
Yeah, but yesterday the crash didn't affect our lead out actually, but we kept him safe somehow in front, and the last kilometer I think still Jasper was with him, and then I was out of reach. I couldn't see what happened exactly, but yeah, I hear the commentator was Caleb Ackermann, and finally it was Caleb.
And what does this mean now for you, because I'm assuming Caleb Ewan will leave the Giro now, is that right?
I think it's right, yeah. Yeah.
So how does that change your race from here on?
I can't say we can relax, but we are quite happy. But we have still guys who can go on a break and win out of the break, so we're still looking for maybe one more. But we're already super happy. And we're not sitting just in the back now.
Mark, can you confirm, is that the end of Caleb Ewan's Giro d'Italia this year? This is audio, you need to say something.
Yeah, that was actually the plan from the beginning, and I think we have to stick with our plan, and changing always, all time, it's never good. Same like we believed always in Caleb, every day. So we also keep the plan, what was from the beginning.
A good way to go out on top?
Of course, if you can go home with a victory is always nice, and he will be also mentally really strong for the upcoming race when he's going to restart again to build up towards the Tour.
So it's definite that he'll go to the Tour as the team sprinter?
I think so, yes.
Two stage wins here obviously gives him that momentum, doesn't it, I guess?
Yeah, there are a lot of different sprints in the Giro, really technical, really long, straight. So today he proved that he also can do this kind of sprints. So that's mentally really good for us, for the team, for the guys who do the lead out. That's a good lesson. So and a good experience actually.
So now what happens for the team, because there's so many climbing stages coming up, but you've got people to go in breakaways?
Yeah, we try to, but I think with the job that Victor did today, Thomas did yesterday also a big job. We need to give him also a small break to recover of it and to be maybe more successful if they are totally fresh to go in a breakaway.
Can you tell me a bit about the lead out and whose job it is to do what part of the lead out?
Yeah, we have here pointed out a road captain, and that's Roger. Roger can do really good on those sprints like today. He guide actually the train, and it starts up. Of course, we have two riders to ride, and that's Thomas and Victor. And then it's up to Adam to bring the guys today, for example, at 3 kilometers from the finish. And then it's Roger, Tosh, Jasper and Caleb. That's the more or less the. We can switch sometimes one guy, maybe Tosh, when it's more hilly. Then it's his job to do, maybe later his job, but we learn a lot this week.
And lastly, it's Lotto Soudal 2, De Koning Quickstep 0. As a Belgian, that must please you.
No, I don't play this game. And in the past, they all also had nice victories, of course. I'm happy to have two victories. That's what we came for. I don't look to other teams. It's never every year the same. That's the truth, and we have to accept this.
Very diplomatic. Not sure I believe you.
You have to.
Bart Leysen's one of those kind of indefatigable Belgians, doesn't give too much away, but he was smirking a little bit at my last question about the tally between Lotto Soudal and De Koning Quickstep. It's a bit of an obsession of mine, this rivalry, the Belgian rivalry, and they do go, they're at pains really to play it down, because I suspect if the Belgian press got wind of any real needle between them, they would be whipping it right up. But the smirk on Leysen's face suggested that he was pretty happy with a 2-0 scoreline at this stage.
It does occasionally flicker into life, doesn't it, that rivalry, Lionel? If you remember at the Vuelta last year when Yelle Wallace won his stage and he sort of shouted something in the direction of the Quickstep bus, didn't he?
He did, yeah. There was a bit of needle there. I can't quite remember what all that was about, but they'd. I think it was to do with them not cooperating together to sort of, you know, bring things back and stuff, wasn't it, for sprints?
Yeah. I'm not sure, Lionel. Let's move forward to the present day. And it is quite unusual, though, isn't it? It feels quite unaccustomed for us, and probably unaccustomed for the Koenig Quickstep to be in a position where they're struggling for wins, and you know. Around the team bus tonight, there was a strange atmosphere, strange for that team, few sort of drooping heads, and you know, Viviani is someone who I think probably puts quite a lot of pressure on himself, and I almost feel as though he's put more pressure on himself at this Giro, coming in as the Italian champion. He's made quite a lot of the fact that, you know, he's wearing the Tricolore jersey and it's been redesigned for this Giro, and I think he probably felt under a lot of pressure to confirm his status as the world's best sprinter, which he was last year, and it hasn't really worked for him, has it? And you know, Rick Van Slick, the direct sportif at the Koenig Quickstep, said tonight that it hasn't been decided yet whether he's going to go to the Tour de France. I think he will go to the Tour de France, so at least he'll get another chance there.
Well, you spoke to Viviani's leadout man, Fabio Sabatini, at the finish, who usually is very reliable, isn't he? He's got people into great positions and out of trouble numerous times, but it's not really clicked here. And it's not like they're strangers to one another, is it?
No, Lionel. They know each other very well. They're missing Michael Morkou, as we said yesterday, and they're missing a couple of other elements in their leadout train. But, you know, a few people watched the sprint today and said it looked as though Viviani didn't quite trust Sabatini at the moment, or vice versa. Anyway, this is what Sabatini said, and also Rick Van Slick, the Koenig Quickstep director sportif. It's not a lack of confidence or faith, because apart from a couple of mistakes, we have total confidence, and he does in us. I think something's just missing. It'll come eventually. You don't win 20 races in a year by fluke. We didn't come here with our A train. It's a bit of a mix. You watch the last few kilometres and you don't see a De Koenig Quickstep like you have at certain times in the past. It's also been a strange Giro because there hasn't been a mountain stage until now. That's created a lot of stress in the bunch, probably.
Just the circumstance, the moment of the sprint, the moment of the year, or how you want to call it, is just the moment that they are a little bit better in shape or just have the little bit extra, and there's no much explanation for that. He gives already so much to the team and to his teammates. You see, everybody was working today once again for him. So the motto of the team is also the Wolfpack, so that means also we fight together and we lose together, and we don't leave anybody behind us. So we keep going.
Dopo una fuga di 192 chilometri e dopo aver scalato in perfetta solitudine cinque colli alpini, il Var, l'Isoar, la Maddalena, il Monginevro e il Sestriere, Fausto si presenta al traguardo di Pinerolo con 12 minuti di vantaggio sul secondo.
So Lionel, what we heard there was a little description of probably the most famous exploit of Fausto Coppi's career, his win by almost 12 minutes from Gino Bartali in the 1949 stage from Cuneo to Pinerolo, went over the Maddalena, the Vars, the Isoar, the Monginevro and Sestriere, climbs 250 kilometres, and even more famous for, probably the most famous line of commentary. It was radio commentary in Italian sport. I'll just translate it. It was, there's one man in the lead, his jersey is white and sky blue, his name is Fausto Coppi. And the journalist commentator was a guy called Mario Ferretti. And you often hear that repeated. Even people who don't follow cycling will know that line.
And the sky blue, of course, refers to the famous Bianchi jersey, which Coppi would have been wearing at the time.
Celeste, sky blue, I don't know. I mean, how do you translate that?
Well, it's Celeste technically, isn't it? But if you've translated it as sky blue, well, I'm not going to correct you, Daniel.
Well, of course, Lionel, tomorrow we've got Cuneo Pinerolo, but it's nothing like that 1949 stage, because there's only one significant climb tomorrow. It should be eventful. Well, it's certainly going to be eventful compared to the last two stages, but I don't think we're going to see anyone win by 12 minutes, do you?
Well, on that point, Daniel, about uneventful stages, it has been a quiet couple of days, and it's been quite a challenge and good fun, actually, to try to bring a bit of life to the podcast while the race has been in it's been in a bit of a snoozy state. A lot of people are saying that it's been a pretty boring opening half now. You know, we're at the halfway mark tonight, I think, and really very little has happened, and the sense is being here that it's a bit of a problem for the Giro. You know, the race relies on a buzz, excitement, TV viewing figures bring the advertising revenues, which bring the TV viewing figures, and it's a cycle that all depends on, each step depends on each other, and this race is definitely lacking something so far. But I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with kind of a boring opening half, as long as the second half of the race packs a punch.
Well, I've got mixed feelings about this, Lionel, in the sense that, you know, I think the races exist now for TV, and it hasn't served the kind of goals that it sets itself. From that point of view, I think a lot of people who are watching the race on TV have said that they're pretty boring. I think the audience figures might come to reflect that. But on the other hand, you know, a bike race is composed of many elements. One element that we've enjoyed today is this link with Faster Coppi, you know, having a finish line that, it was 500 metres from the Villa Coppi and then the press room today in this museum. You know, that's been great, but it's something that I suppose it's our job to communicate to the watching, listening public, and it goes through the filter of us. It's not something that's immediately obvious. But I think Mara Venni, the race director, is coming in for a bit of flack. I spoke to him this morning in Carpi, and I sort of asked him, who was to blame for these less than thrilling first 12-13 days of the race? Is it the riders, or is it Venni and his colleagues who have designed the route? Here's what Venni said.
No,
I'm not disappointed, and I'm not going to criticise the riders for not making it more exciting. Everyone thinks the first half of the Giro has been straightforward. Even if we don't talk about the weather, which I think has increased fatigue levels generally, I think there have been some very important stages for the rouleurs. It's gone the way it's gone, but I can't criticise the riders. Look at the time trial from Riccione to San Marino. Watch that and then try to tell me you're disappointed in the riders.
Riccione a San Marino.
Well, Lionel, Mara Venni always looks like a man whose neighbour has parked their Volkswagen in his geraniums. I mean, he often looks quite angry, but I think he's looked a bit angrier than usual in the last few days. And I get the sense that although he sounded fairly upbeat there, I get the sense he's probably got a few regrets about this route.
Well, it certainly needs to spark into life in the mountains, and the fact that the Gavia stage is given currently a 60% chance of going over the Gavia. The rumours that they might go over the Mortirolo twice if the Gavia is not passable seems to be false. It'd probably just be a truncated stage, I think, or maybe rerouted slightly.
It's as false as this rumour about Primoz Roglic going for a run every morning. I think they're mixing him up with Lionel Burney.
I don't go every morning, but I do drink wine every night, like Roglic.
Exactly.
But this thing about the Grand Tours exist, you know, the 3 weeks journey around a country, the sort of ebb and flow of the action. I think the bigger problem is that there's always a couple of days lag, isn't there? It will take two barnstorming stages, really, for the audience to kind of cotton on to the fact that the race has sparked into life. And I think that's probably the biggest concern for Venni, that it needs something pretty spectacular to happen over this weekend. Otherwise, people won't be tuning in, and the whole thing depends not on the people who are really interested in cycling, but it depends on capturing the imagination of the more casual fans, doesn't it? And frankly, this Giro has been one for, well, not just the purists, but the purists that can keep their eyes open of an afternoon.
The other angle to this napalm is how it's felt and how it's looked from the athlete's point of view. And we talked at some length yesterday about this issue of, you know, whether it's been so sedate for some guys that they're kind of detraining, losing condition. I was keen to hear a bit more about that today. I asked one rider who's done pretty well so far. He's flying pretty high in general classification, Trek Segafredo's Bauke Mollema.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think in the Tour de France also sometimes it's like this, that the first mountain stage is around stage 10 or 11. I think last year also in the Tour was stage 10, the first one. But yeah, it's not typical for the Giro or the Vuelta. They are normally the mountain stages start much earlier. But yeah, I mean, I think the first week has been not really easy. I mean, with all the long days, maybe the intensity has not been too hard, but still always the finals. And then we have some small climbs where we went fast and the time trial. So yeah, I think everybody's still pretty tired from the first week. I think you also saw that in the time trial where I think guys were just tired and that's why some of them lost a lot of time. And yeah, like a stage like yesterday and maybe also today, it was really super easy. I had a average heart rate was less than 100, so I can't remember I often had that in a race. But yeah, in the end, I mean, maybe it's nice to start the mountain block a bit more fresh with two flat days now after the rest day.
You obviously had a really good time trial, but before the time trial, did you kind of think, oh, I don't know how my legs are going to respond here, because I haven't done a big effort for almost 2 weeks?
No, but I mean, the prologue was a good effort, yeah. And the stage to L'Aquila, that was a pretty hard final. And I mean, yeah, still there's many moments in the race where you have to do short sprints, short efforts, especially in the final. So yeah, the feeling I had was all good. It was pretty good the whole week already. So yeah, I was expecting to do a good time trial, but yeah, it was nice to see that confirmation also in the results.
Well, Mollema had an excellent time trial at San Marino, Daniel, and he's currently 12th overall. He's 3 minutes 45 behind Conti, so just under 2 minutes, 1:55 behind Primoz Roglic. But he's nestled in there as almost the best of the rest, along with Nibali and Bob Jungels.
Lionel, after I did that interview today, I heard something fascinating about Bauke Mollema and the way he's going to approach these mountain stages. He's always struggled in the past, particularly with stages which have been fairly flat and then have finished with a big climb, like, for example, the stage to Europa a couple of years ago that Tom Dumoulin won. Mollema has been talking to the Trek Segafredo performance kind of director, Josu Larrazabal, about how they could possibly get over this issue that he's had. And he's come up with a plan, I understand. In tomorrow's stage, don't be surprised if you see him stop, make a natural break. What is that, what they call it these days? A natural break in euphemism?
Well, you certainly do.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, he might stop to relieve himself at the side of the road. And he's going to make a point of not asking his team to go back to help him so that he can do an effort early in the stage to as a kind of warm-up on the road. This comes from a very good source. It doesn't come from the horse's mouth. It sounds vaguely plausible, a bit eccentric, and a bit risky as well.
Well, it sounds a bit like what we were talking about yesterday with, you know, the idea that riders may have to create intense efforts in order to, you know, spark their legs into life. Fascinating. We'll look out for that. I mean, how do we think he's going to do? He is at the sort of diesel end of the climbers, isn't he? Doesn't like it when it's, you know, really jumping about, I suspect. But he's very well placed, and he's in there with Bob Jungels, who's another man who has certainly got the capability to finish in the top 10. I think his best result in the Giro was 6th 3 years ago. He's also been 8th in the Giro. He likes the Giro compared to the Tour de France. He's told us that back in January at the De Koenig Quickstep training camp. Maybe a little bit more pressure on his very broad shoulders with Viviani failing to win a stage, of course.
Yes, Lionel, and I also spoke to Rick van Slick, the De Koenig Quickstep Director Sportive, about that issue as well, about Jungels and what the team expects from him over the next few days.
Well, as I saw that his TT was quite good, of course we have Roglic, who was very impressive, but at the other hand, if he saw that Bob was also in the even worst weather conditions doing his TT, I think condition is good, and if he can hang on where he is now, he will move up in a classification. So we are hopeful again. The sprint we didn't get, but there's still so much to come for us, so we're looking forward.
And just finally, it's been such a strange Giro. It's a week and a half, more than a week and a half, without a big mountain stage. What do you think that's going to do to, you know, other riders that are really going to enjoy that, and some riders are really going to suffer unexpectedly because of that?
Well, of course, for the GC riders, they have to be ready from the start. They have to be attentive, but it's not that they have to be in the over shape to the start. They have the week we had was quite hard. We have a few long stages where the bunch was having a nice rhythm to make them better. So I think they had 1 week to build up the last percent of their condition, and that might be very useful for the GC riders.
So what do we expect tomorrow, Daniel, on the road to Pinerolo? Just the one climb, the Montoso. Is second category, is it, or first category?
First category, Napalm, it's tough. It is 8.8 kilometres, 9.5% average, maximum 14%. That is a very tough climb.
And another little springboard for a likely stage winner right near to the finish in Pinerolo as well.
Spoke to a couple of people today, Lionel, about what they thought might happen. Matt White, Mitchelton Scott, Direct Sportive, said that he thinks maybe someone sort of 3 or 4 minutes adrift of Valerio Conti, but not really in the GC battle, might look to get in a break tomorrow and take the jersey of Conti without really threatening the overall contenders. Matt White expects, well, the serious business to kick off the following day, as most of us do.
Well, we will be in Pinerolo tomorrow night, and we'll be joined by Richard Moore, who'll be back at the jury. He's hoping to make it in time for tomorrow night's podcast. I'll sort of swing over to one side of the road and let him take the microphone.
Yeah, I can hear we can always hear the hooves, can't we, at this point, you know, when it's only a day away.
Well, we will be in Pinerolo tomorrow night, and we hope you join us then. Until then, thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Lionel.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.